And now, Virgin Most Powerful Radio is pleased to present Hands-On Apologetics with renowned Catholic author and apologist, Gary Matuta.
Better time to do it than now. You are entering into Virgin Most Powerful's Apologetics Dojo. I'm Gary Matuta. We got an awesome show in store for you today. And you know what? It's snowing outside here at the Midwest Command Center for Virgin Most Powerful Radio. You know, it's kind of a funny story. I live in Southeast Michigan. And my wife approached me this year and she said, "We've been getting so much snow. Why don't we pay somebody to do snow removal for the house?" So I said, fine. And so the guy schedules, you can pay so much money per inch. You know, if it's so many inches, you pay this amount. If it's so many inches, you pay that. Or you can go for gold. And for a flat fee, he will remove as much snow as falls. And so since we've been having some heavy winter in the last few years, we decided to do the fee. And we have had virtually no snowfall here all the way up until today, which is kind of funny because we had some friends over for the holidays and they said, "Gary, you must be really mad." And I said, "No, that is the best investment I have ever made. In fact, I'm probably going to do the same thing next year." And which is kind of funny because if you think about it, that is based on a logical fallacy, right? And it could be anything from post hoc ergo propter hoc. Because I paid the fee, therefore, you know, and there was no snow, therefore, me paying the fee is the cause of no snow. You know, there's all sorts of things. And so that's why here at Hands-On Apologetics, we talk about logical fallacies, not only sharpen our arguments, but also our wits. Because humor, if you think about it, a lot of it's based on logical fallacies. Most often it's equivocation, right? You remember the old Henny Youngman joke. "I haven't had a bite in 3 weeks," a beggar told him. So Henny said, "I bit him." Of course, that's equivocation on the word bite, right? Now, if you think about it, let's apply this to its logical conclusion. If logical fallacies is the heart of humor, then that means Mr. Spock, you know, Gene Roddenberry got Mr. Spock completely wrong. Because he shouldn't be without emotion. He should think about it. Vulcans should be the funniest creatures in the galaxy. Because they live by logic, and so they have a good handle on logical fallacies. So I don't know why I started to show off with that, but I thought it was a good illogical way to start. We got a great show. In fact, one of the most dynamic speakers out there. I've heard him several times, been following his career. He does lots of talks with youth. I know he works with Focus, which is a Catholic ministry focused on college students, college-age students. He's written books on morality, and he has a new book, Does God Exist? The incomparable Matt Frad will be joining us after the first break. This is the first time I actually talked to Matt, but I've been a huge fan of his and his podcast series, Pints with Aquinas. So he's going to come into the JoJo, and I honestly don't know how the conversation is going to turn, but I know it'll be a lot of fun. Just because the guy is so dynamic. And, of course, we're going to have our Finding the Fallacy, which is the single authority fallacy, and the Meet the Early Church Father segment. We're going to talk about Rufinus. Rufinus, the early church father Rufinus. So, also, you know, it's amazing how quickly time flies when you're having fun. But just in case you've missed it, we have a huge conference coming up in Southern California, Spiritual Warfare Conference 5 in Covina at Sacred Heart Chapel. And that's going to be January 11th and 12th, so Friday and Saturday. If you haven't gotten tickets, I highly recommend it, but just from the quality of the speakers. And I've heard that these conferences are amazing. So if you haven't gotten tickets, please do, because you owe it to yourself to be armed, you know, as they say on Jesus 911 all the time, to be prepared. If you're prepared, you don't have to prepare, right? So just keep that in mind. And also, it's time for our shout outs to all those watching on live stream on Facebook and YouTube. Hello, everybody. It's great to see you. Great to see so many familiar names. Very good. You know, it's kind of fun doing this with live stream. Although I do have to say, it is a little nerve-wracking because you have a camera on you, so you have to look good and not look dumb. So that's tough for me because that's just the way I look. All right, and always, if you want to join in the conversation, especially with Matt Fradd, maybe you have a question that you've been dying to ask Matt, give us a call at 888-526-2151. That's 888-526-2151. We'd love to have you come on the show. You know, it takes a little while when you're in the queue, so please be patient. We see you when you're there, so, you know, just stay on the line, and we'll get to you. And also for those who maybe have questions that you don't want to ask on the air, but nevertheless, you do want answers. Maybe you're having trouble at work with an anti-Catholic, or maybe there's a family member who is raising objections you're not really sure how to answer. You can always send us an email. The Dojo mailbox is always open at questions@handsonapologetics.com. That's questions@handsonapologetics.com. And if you want to be anonymous, you don't want to mention on the air, that's fine. Just put that in somewhere in the letter. But if you do, we will bring it on the air. Except, you know, I usually wait until we have a few questions before we do it on the air, just to kind of get the flow going. Because I found out that usually when I'm answering questions on the air, then that makes people call in. And I'd rather have a segment where we have open time for people to call in, rather than something that's kind of dense. Like, for example, yesterday we talked about on the January 8th broadcast, we're talking about sacrifice, understanding sacrifice so that we can understand the sacrifice of the Mass. And, of course, tomorrow is going to be another one where we're going to take what we learned there, and I'm going to show you why the Mass is not something that's optional, that every Christian really ought to avail themselves of the Holy Sacrifice of the Mass. All right, so let's jump right into our segments. The finding the fallacy for today is a very simple one. It's called single authority, and single authority occurs when you're using only one opinion to sell a product or an idea. Very, very simple fallacy. And, of course, you know, I think it's also obvious why it is not the best way to make a reasoned argument for something, because after all, first, an opinion is just an opinion. I have my opinions, you have yours, and, you know, if you put the two together, you have two opinions. It doesn't really settle anything. But to hang something like to sell a product or to sell a particular idea based on one person's opinion is really more or less without support. So that's the finding of the fallacy. So we want to be thorough. We want to get both the very common ones, like equivocation, like we mentioned earlier, or post hoc, ergo propter hoc, you know, after this, therefore, because of this. And we hit the small ones too, like single authority. So that's how we rock here in the dojo. Okay. So let's look about our early church father for today is Rufinus, who was born in 345, roughly thereabouts, and died in 410. He was born in another northern Italian village of Concordia, which is a few miles west of Aquilina. He died shortly after Ulrich's sack of Rome in 410, and he's buried in Sicily. Now, Rufinus's life, in his youth, while he was being educated, he was the fellow student of another extremely important church father, St. Jerome, you know, a doctor of the church. They became best buddies. In fact, they had incredibly deep friendship. And unfortunately, it also became one of the most acrimonious relationships in church history. You know, at first they were best buddies, shoulder to shoulder, but like I said, it ended with a big bang. In fact, it was so bad, ladies and gentlemen, that St. Augustine actually warned Jerome that if he continued his attacks on Rufinus, never again would anybody ever want to have a friend out of fear, of dread, of having such a bad future foe. In other words, it was really acrimonious. And as usual, if you know anything about St. Jerome, you realize that St. Jerome was not, you know, he wasn't Slanus Casey. He wasn't, you know, very humble and quiet kind of saint. He showed no moderation whatsoever. When he entered into a dialogue or an argument with somebody, he basically, there was no boundaries. He was incredibly pugilistic, I guess you could say. He was a fighter. And so when his buddy, former buddy, Rufinus died, Jerome made the comment, "Cato without, Nero within." That's how bad it was. So what led to the quarrel? Well, you know, it's funny because they both were very big fans of the early church fathers' writings, Origen. Now, Origen was a brilliant early church father. He was from the Alexandrian school, and he's also the father of textual criticism. He's the first one to start comparing different manuscripts of scripture and comparing and contrasting them to get the best reading. Well, anyway, they were both big fans of Origen, but unfortunately, Origen made some theological mistakes. And by the time of the 4th century, around the time of Jerome and Rufinus, some of these people took these mistakes and ran with it, and it became a heresy. Well, Jerome denied Origen, you know, denied his affiliation with Origen, and Rufinus affirmed Origen and tried to make Origen sound orthodox. Hence, it really is the two great hero. You know, they're both loved as hero of the church, and yet it became the source of the division. All right, more come up after this break. You listen to Hands on Apologetics.
This is Terry Barber inviting you to the upcoming Spiritual Warfare Conference, January 11th and 12th at the Sacred Heart Chapel in downtown Covina. If you go to virginmostpowerfulradio.org, you can join us with that, or call us at 877-526-2151. Jesse Romero will be there, Father Wolfgang will be there, and our very own Matt Arnold will be there, and I'll be the MC. Don't miss out on this wonderful event, January 11th and 12th.
It is only because of your continued prayers and generous donations that Virgin Most Powerful Radio can broadcast live each weekday. We count on your spiritual and financial support because you understand the urgent need for Catholic programming that shares the gospel with clarity and charity, but without compromise. We desperately need to fix the bugs so you can listen live on our app or YouTube without any glitches. Plus, meet traditional broadcast standards in order to provide our exclusive programming to Catholic radio stations around the country and around the world, absolutely free of charge. As usual, we're doing it all on a shoestring budget, but we cannot do it without you. If you like what you hear on Virgin Most Powerful, I ask you to please prayerfully consider becoming a monthly donor. You can set it up with the touch of a button on our website, CatholicRC.org.
Buying or selling your home or your business property? This is Terry Barber. Real Estate for Life underwrites the Terry and Jesse Show, and they can connect you to one of 900 pro-life real estate agents around the world. And when they receive their referral fee, they will give 80% of it to a pro-life organization. Wow! That's 80%! RealEstateForLife.org, 877-LIFE-US1.
Now, back to Hands-On Apologetics with Gary Machuda. If you'd like to join the conversation, call 888-526-2151. Here's Gary.
Welcome back, everybody. And it's time for our guest. As I mentioned before, the great Matt Frad. Matt Frad speaks to tens of thousands of people every year. He is the best-selling author of several books, including Does God Exist? The Socratic dialogue on the five ways of Thomas Aquinas and the porn myth, exposing the reality behind the fantasy of pornography. Matt earned his master's and undergraduate degrees in philosophy at Holy Apostles College and is pursuing his master's degree in theology from the Augustine Institute. Matt's podcasts are Pints with Aquinas, which receives over 500,000 downloads every month. Matt lives with his wife, Cameron, and their children in Georgia. Matt, Fred, welcome to Hands on Apologetics.
What's up, famous Gary?
I wish it was.
I don't think I'm famous, but you know, you're one of these veteran apologists, in my view, who's put out some real great stuff and has blessed the rest of us. So thank you.
Well, thank you. Yeah, I'm not famous. I'm infamous. That's the big difference.
Okay.
Yeah. Now, this is an update. This needs an update, doesn't it? Because I think didn't you get your master's degree already?
I have my master's in philosophy. I'm pursuing it in theology through Augustine now.
Okay, yeah. Well, hey, you know, you've been on my wish list of guests for quite a while because one day I was, you know, surfing through the YouTube videos and I stumbled upon Pints with Aquinas. And I was just bowled over by your approach to Aquinas. How did you come up with the idea for the podcast?
Yeah, about 3 years ago, I decided I'd like to start a podcast in part to try and get some extra credit for my schooling. And so I was thinking, you know, the Matt Fradd Show or something like that. And the more I thought about it, I thought, well, you know, one of the things I've always loved doing is having a drink with people and talking about really big things. This is something I used to do as a teenager, even before I was a Christian. And it occurred to me that, you know, Aquinas has written a great deal almost on every topic imaginable. So what if I base it around his teachings? And then, you know, every episode we could kind of read a bit and discuss it. And then Pints with Aquinas naturally came out of that.
Yeah, and it just snowballed, too. I mean, it was fun to watch how your podcast just exploded, you know, with people, you know, Catholics and non-Catholics as well.
Yeah, when you do a podcast, or I guess the same thing is true with a radio show, you really have little idea as to how your podcast is impacting people. Like, no idea. I mean, you get some comments, you get some nasty comments, you know, you really pray and hope that it's blessing people, but you're not that sure. And I was just at Focus's Seek conference earlier this month, and there was about 17,000 college students there, and I met just hundreds and hundreds of people who told me how the show has blessed them, how it's kind of, it was instrumental in their conversion to the Catholic Church and things like that. And I just think, you know, glory to Jesus Christ that he can use my dung as manure for their growth. You know, I'm okay with that.
Well, yeah, you're being very humble because actually you take what could be very dry, esoteric material and you make it fun. And that I enjoy listening to. I've learned a lot.
I certainly don't consider myself an expert in any sense of the word. I would consider myself a studious amateur who is very passionate and interested in the teachings of the church and of Thomas Aquinas in particular. And I just try my best to break it down.
Oh, you do an outstanding job, like I said. And I also saw your talk on Seek. That was also on YouTube. And by the way, if anybody out there would like to see it, just I'm not sure where would it go to, either Focus or just type Matt Fradd.
Yeah, I guess if they went to YouTube and typed in Matt Fradd Seek, they'd find it, yeah.
Yeah, outstanding job. You're probably one of the most dynamic speakers out there. And you're fun to listen to. That's what I love about it.
Yeah. Well,
Oh, go ahead. I'm sorry.
Sure. I was just going to say, that's very kind of you. Obviously, there's been no perfect evangelizer since the time of Christ, and since the person of Christ, and so we're always growing and trying our best, and not everybody reaches everybody, and that's why it's important that all of us do our best to evangelize and be as honest and as faithful as we can. I think that's what's so key, and that's what the Lord keeps bringing up in my prayer life lately, that it's fidelity we're called to, not success. And that's true for all of us, you know, whether we have a blog or a radio show or a YouTube channel, it can be tempting to seek success and have that feeling of success sort of validate our fidelity. But it's not necessarily the case. I think we should be more interested in being faithful to Christ and the church, whether or not we have one listener or 1,000.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. I've learned that God is incredibly efficient, and he will bring to you whoever needs you, you know. So that might be just 2 people, or it could be 1,000 people. You don't know. So, yeah, absolutely. Now, as you mentioned, you actually, now I think if I remember correctly, you were born in a Catholic home, but you left the faith. Is that correct?
Yeah, my mom was Catholic. My grandma was really Catholic. She was wonderful. My dad wasn't baptized. And so as a kid, my mom would bring me and my siblings to church while my dad stayed at home. But growing up, the faith wasn't really articulated in a coherent and convincing way. And so I sometimes say I abandoned the faith of my childhood, but I'm not sure if that's accurate, because in order to abandon something, you have to first sort of have it first. And I don't know if I ever did have it. Certainly I was baptized and was receiving the sacraments frequently. But, you know, prayer, the teachings of the church, I didn't know about these things. And so I sort of just drifted into agnosticism at an early age.
Yeah, I think that happens to a lot of people. That, you know, it's just the culture is so much more immediate than what you were taught.
It's more conducive to unbelief than it is to belief, obviously. So,
yeah. And so what was it that brought you back? What obviously, it's God's grace did. But how did God's grace work in your life that you began to suspect that maybe there's something true about the church?
Yeah, it's a long story, but I'll make it brief. When I was 17 years old and had stopped going to church for a long time, my mom came home from Mass and told me about this trip called World Youth Day in Italy. And I just heard free trip to Italy, honestly. And so I said, yeah, look, I'm down. Let's do that. And I was like genuinely excited about just seeing another country, you know. You know, we started to prepare, and I didn't believe in Jesus Christ or any of that stuff. I thought that was all sort of stories that we'd concocted to sort of, I don't know, maybe because we got too carried away with what Jesus said. We were like, well, he's like God, so he's God, you know. And, but I, for the first time in my life on this trip, I met young Catholics who loved Jesus Christ, you know, and they believed what the church taught. And they weren't weird, you know, they were normal, they were intelligent. And it really kind of challenged my preconceived ideas about what Christians were like. And I had a lot of questions for them. And, of course, when you fly from Sydney, Australia, to Rome, Italy, that's a heck of a lot of time to be talking with people.
Yeah, that's true.
So I just, you know, and I was wearing my death metal T-shirts. I was dropping all sorts of foul language and, you know, not trying to be provocative, but that's just how I was. And people were really gentle with me and kind, you know, and really, really compassionate. No one was abrasive with me or anything like that. There was one person who pulled me aside and told me I should stop swearing, but even he pulled me aside and was really gentle and loving with me, you know, and I found myself really captivated by these people. I saw a joy in them that I wanted but didn't have. And I thought about all my friends, you know, we were hooking up, we were drinking, we were doing all the stuff. But, you know, we didn't have this kind of joy. This seemed weird, special, without them being weird. And so that really kind of opened up my mind. I remember thinking, gosh, look, there's 2.5 million young people at this thing. Maybe there's something to the church. And maybe this Jesus thing is real. And I remember thinking that I really wish that it was real, like that it would be a really good thing if God existed and loved me. You know, if that wasn't just a fairy tale that we told ourselves so that we could feel like our lives had meaning, but that if it was actually true, that would be really great. And it was during that trip on several prayer experiences and through community that I came to believe that God existed and that the story was real. And I sort of gave my life to Jesus, and it was a, you know, it was a really emotional event. You know, it's funny. Sometimes people are jealous, you know, of people like myself who have really emotional kind of conversions. I'm actually jealous of people who say things like they've read their way into the faith. I think that sounds rather cerebral and rational, but for me it was quite emotional. And I came home and I had an undeniable joy, and my small town kind of didn't know what to do with me, I think.
Sure. So was it an immediate change where you put away the death metal stuff and, you know?
That's a good question. I mean, in some ways it was definitely immediate. I even went home and took what I considered to be anti-Christian records and CDs, and I would shatter them. You know, like I'd break them in half, and I brought this table from outside into my room, and I got a beautiful, huge painting of our Lord crowned with thorns, and I set up a little altar in my room with candles and holy water, and I just sort of dove all the way in, and that scared my parents and scared a lot of my friends and turned a lot of people off. But I was just totally taken by this person of Jesus. I didn't want to think about anything else. I remember watching those old cheesy Jesus videos. That's all I wanted to do. And I would just read the Bible in class. I would skip class and go to the chapel. There was nothing else that took my interest. But then on the other hand, though, I was still going to parties. And, you know, at times I would be reading the Bible to friends at parties. But then at other times I would try and hook up with people and I would smoke dope, you know, especially when I felt spiritually dry. So, yeah, in some ways it was an instantaneous sort of thing. And in other ways, there was a lot of vice that had developed in my life that needed to be seriously worked on and still does.
So you have that initial invasion of grace, but there's still has that sanctification to get rid of old habits and you know, totally reform your life. I had a similar experience where I had this amazing experience of God's grace, and then I was just overcome with this hunger to learn as much as I could, you know, because all this time I never really bothered to learn.
That's spot on. I mean, I look at my kids now. I'm so happy they've got a beautiful classical education. You know, they're memorizing poetry. They're learning Latin. They're reading good books. For me, I think I read my first book when I was in fifth grade. And after that, I didn't read until I was about 17. I just didn't read. It just wasn't a thing that I did. But like yourself, Gary, once I came to Christ, I then had an insatiable hunger for, Christian things and what the saints said and whatnot.
Very good. Okay, well, hold it here. We're talking to Matt Frad. And stay tuned, ladies and gentlemen. There's more discussion at the other side of the break. You're listening to Hands On Apologetics. Stay tuned.
Matthew Arnold here, encouraging you to go to vmpr.org to register for our upcoming Spiritual Warfare Conference this January 11th and 12th at the Sacred Heart Chapel in Covina. Father Wolfgang will be speaking along with Jesse Romero, Terry Barber as MC, and yours truly, talking about spiritual warfare and the family. Protect your family now. Go to vmp.org and register for this conference. Don't miss it.
It is only because of your continued prayers and generous donations that Virgin Most Powerful Radio can broadcast live each weekday. We count on your spiritual and financial support because you understand the urgent need for Catholic programming that shares the gospel with clarity and charity, but without compromise. We desperately need to fix the bugs so you can listen live on our app or YouTube without any glitches. Plus, meet traditional broadcast standards in order to provide our exclusive programming to Catholic radio stations around the country and around the world, absolutely free of charge. As usual, we're doing it all on a shoestring budget, but we cannot do it without you. If you like what you hear on Virgin Most Powerful, I ask you to please prayerfully consider becoming a monthly donor. You can set it up with the touch of a button on our website, CatholicRC.org.
buying or selling your home or your business property? This is Terry Barber. Real Estate for Life underwrites the Terry and Jesse Show, and they can connect you to one of 900 pro-life real estate agents around the world. And when they receive their referral fee, they will give 80% of it to a pro-life organization. Wow, that's 80%. RealEstateForLife.org, 877-LIFE-US1.
This is Jesse Romero. You're listening to Hands-On Apologetics with Gary Machuda on Virgin Most Powerful Radio.
Looking to the incomparable Matt Frad and from Pints Aquinas fame. So you definitely want to check out his podcast. Go to pintswithaquinas.com. Or I think it's mattfrad.com. Is that correct too, Matt? Your other
Either will get you to different places. Yeah.
Yeah. Just great, great work. I want to talk about your book, Does God Exist? The Socratic Dialogue on the Five Ways of Thomas Aquinas. You know, what's funny is that is a pretty scary title to a book it's very approachable. how did you come up with the idea for writing a book like this?
I've been thinking a while now about a sort of dialogue book for like several years, actually. I remember like 5 years ago, I was thinking of a book that would be called like Trolling for Truth. You know, people on the internet are trolling and things like that. And I did my best to sort of engage with atheists online and think of a kind of way that the conversation could play out. I've certainly listened to my fair share of atheist debates and heard what atheists and Christians have had to say in response. And I thought to myself, you know, a couple of years ago that while a lot of people have become familiar with the excellent work of Dr. William Lane Craig, a lot of Catholics aren't that familiar with Thomas Aquinas's five ways. And there's a lot of misunderstandings people have when thinking of the five ways. And so I thought, well, that would be a good thing to do. And also I'd studied a lot of philosophy and read Plato a lot and thought a Socratic dialogue like this would be a cool way to do it, because it would be a less, formidable way of entering into these complex issues. So the idea is that an atheist and a Catholic meet in a coffee shop one day. She's there reading her Bible, he's reading Dawkins, and they get into this conversation, which starts out rather adversarial. But over the week or two of them meeting together and talking, they develop quite a relationship. And we really did our best to have the atheist put forth the best objections to God's existence in general and to the arguments of Aquinas in particular, so much that we even had atheists sort of like read the book for us just to make sure that we weren't sort of straw-manning their position. Now, of course, I'm sure at the end of the day, we did do that to some point, because the purpose of the book was to show the superiority of Aquinas' views, to give a completely sort of realistic back and forth. May have taken, you know, several volumes. But we didn't want it to be cheesy. You know, so at the end, the atheist doesn't convert. We didn't want it to be this sort of cheesy climax to the book or whatnot. But he's certainly a lot more open. And Lucy, the protagonist, the Catholic, is a lot more sort of perhaps humbled and a lot more open to where AJ, the atheist, is coming from.
Yeah. I thought that was a brilliant way to present it, because, when you think of Socratic dialogue, you think Plato, Platonic dialogues.
Mm.
But, Thomas and Aristotle, you don't really find dialogues in their writing. It's more expositionary.
Well, that's
so
right.
It's a good marriage, you know.
Yeah, well, good. Yeah, it was real fun, and I put together the book, you know, and it was the publisher was about to print it, and I said, well, hang on, let's just hang on, like, I think I have a basic grasp of the arguments, but I'm not an expert, so why don't we send it around to a few philosophers, and they sent it to Rob Delfino, who would eventually be my co-author, and he made some suggestions that were really quite good, and, so we made those changes, and then he had some more, and they were quite substantive. And I was like, well, look, why don't we just co-author this? Because he's certainly much more of an expert in this area than I am. Mm-hmm. And so, we ended up co-authoring, and I think it became a lot better book because of it.
It's very solid.
Yeah.
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 You can tell that you put a lot of work into both understanding Aquinas, but also understanding the common objections against Aquinas.
Yeah. And quite honestly, like, a lot of those objections were my own. even as we kind of went through the process. So as Robert would sort of put into the mouth of Lucy a more sophisticated nuance of the argument than I had heard, I naturally had questions. You know, I was the one being incredulous. Well, how about this, Robert? You know, I don't see why this is the case. And so we would put that into the mouth of AJ. It was really fun to write. And Rob, my co-author, actually lives in New York, and we actually got together in New York City, and we actually picked out a particular coffee shop where we decided that the dialogues would take place.
Oh.
You know, and we even kind of envisioned a table where they would sit every day. So, you know, it is, in a sense, it's a work of fiction, but it obviously deals with really sophisticated philosophical non-fiction issues.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, another thing, and I'd like your input on this. I've noticed that a lot of, self-styled new atheists, they don't seem to really grasp Aquinas' arguments. It's almost like, for some reason, they never can, if they were to repeat the theist argument, it's almost invariably a caricature, you know? Have you noticed that as well?
Yeah, you're spot on. I mean, I'm all about nuance, but when it comes to what you're talking about, you couldn't be more right. In fact, one of my favorite questions to ask atheists who I begin dialoguing with is this. I say, what is the, in your opinion, I say, Mr. Atheist, what is the best argument for God's existence, but why do you think it fails, right? Because if somebody were to ask me that question, what's the best argument for atheism, but why do you think ultimately it's not convincing? Yeah, I think I'd be able to give some pretty sophisticated reasons because I've really thought about this stuff.
Right.
But often when you ask an atheist what's the best argument, they a lot of the time, not always, obviously there are very sophisticated and intelligent atheists, but often they just trot out this caricatured argument. You think, you don't even look like you've taken any time to seriously look at these. And that's definitely the case with the five ways. I mean, the five ways are pretty complex. They're not easily laid out. They're not like the Kalam argument that, you know, William Lane Craig lays out, or it's the moral argument. So for that reason, a lot of Catholics, I mean, if you go online and type in the five ways, in my experience, most of the explanations, even from Catholics, are incorrect. So I guess we can't expect atheists to have them down pat if many Catholics can't understand them either.
Yeah, and that was one thing with Pints of Aquinas, I think you really hammer home, and rightly, is that when Aquinas proposed these five ways in the Summa Theologica, it was just a summary, right? He's not giving all the background information to each one.
Right. So just to show that, you know, in the Summa Theologiae, the first way, the argument from motion, is like essentially one paragraph. It's the longest of the ways, at least in the Summa Theologiae. But in the Summa Contra Gentiles, he takes about 21 paragraphs to sort of lay it out. So yeah, like in the introduction to the Summa Theologiae, he says like this is just a work for beginners. So, well, if you take someone's argument for beginners and pretend that's the be all and end all of the argument, then yeah, you're gonna misunderstand it.
Yeah, and even worse, some of the new atheist authors, they don't even give that. They just say, well, let me give you boil down a summary of the argument. You know,
that's right. And Dawkins, Dawkins doesn't quote Aquinas once. I mean, at least he tries to grapple with the five ways. The other quote-unquote new atheists don't do that, but he doesn't actually quote Aquinas. Like, you get the strong impression that he has read a summary of Aquinas and then has taken him to task. He grossly misunderstands and misrepresents the five ways.
Yeah, and you have an excellent interview with Dr. Edward Fazer.
Yeah.
Who just destroys, is a two-parter. I recommend it to everybody. Look it up, Pints with Aquinas, type in Fazer. You two just destroy his caricature, because that's how it is. It's a caricature.
Well, Fazer particularly, I mean, he's really brilliant and he knows his stuff, you know, and sometimes we can be hyperbolic online, can't we, when we say, like, this person destroyed such and such or so and so. And then,
right.
You know, you look at that thing and you think, well, it's not really destroyed. No, this is decimation. You know? There's no... it's just really unfortunate. Now, that doesn't mean that Aquinas' ways work necessarily.
Right.
All we're saying right now is the common interpretation and presentation of them from atheists is downright wrong. And so you want to at least get that right. You know, you want to understand your opponent's argument well. You want to steel man their position before showing why they're wrong why you think they're wrong.
And invariably, they will say things like, well, it starts with the principle, everything has a cause, you know. And as you pointed out, it's just that's not part of anybody's formulation for an argument for the existence of God.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, that's right. I mean, saying if everything needs a cause, who caused God, is that's like saying if your brother's a bachelor, what's his wife's name? You've misunderstood. You know, if you speak English, that question makes no sense, because right. Bachelor means unmarried, and God means, in a, you know, at least partially, uncaused cause. So asking who created God doesn't make any sense. But, you know, like, it would be easy for us to sit back and be rather triumphalistic about all this,
sure.
But maybe it should also cause us to, you know, think about how we misrepresent and mischaracterize and dismiss atheists
right.
for the genuinely good and interesting questions they bring up about God and these sorts of things. Like, we don't want to just, you know, go straight to the other side where we fall into the same mistakes we're criticizing atheists for making.
Oh, sure. Yeah, absolutely. In fact, you know, we have a little more than a minute. What do you think would be the strongest argument against the existence of God?
I think the problem of evil, in my personal opinion, is the strongest argument against the existence of God.
Yeah.
It doesn't seem like if there really is a good and powerful God, why are people being sexually trafficked right now? Like, that's despicable. And why are animals needlessly suffering in forest fires and they're not even culpable for any sins and yet they're burning to death? Like, when I think about those things, I sometimes find it hard to believe in God.
Yeah, absolutely. And that was one of the reasons with Aquinas, is two objections.
Right. It's really his only reason. Because what's interesting is the two arguments, one is it's a superfluous hypothesis. The other is evil. But just because something's a superfluous hypothesis doesn't mean it's false. It just means you don't need God to explain the world. That doesn't mean God doesn't exist. So that argument doesn't even try to disprove God's existence. It just goes to show that you don't need God, but maybe he still exists. So really the only argument Aquinas puts forth is the problem of evil.
Yeah. So, I definitely agree. So, you know what? On the other side of the break, maybe we could talk a little bit about that, and then we'll jump into the five ways. How's that sound?
Yeah, sounds great.
All right. You're talking to Matt Fradd. You're listening to Hands On Apologetics. Stay tuned, everyone.
Hello, this is Terry Barber. I want to invite you to the Spiritual Warfare Conference coming January 11th and 12th at the Sacred Heart Chapel. It's going to be fantastic. I want to encourage you to sign up by going to virginmostpowerfulradio.org. One of the speakers is sitting right next to me, Matthew Arnold. Matt, what are you going to be telling our folks about?
I'm going to tell them about my journey into the Catholic Church, because in my younger days, I was in the entertainment business. I was all involved with cult beliefs and practices like tarot cards and astrology and even channeling. And I had my own brush with the demonic.
Wow. Not only Matt, but Father Wolfgang from the Opus Angelorum, popular priest, he's welcome back. And our friend Jesse Romero, my partner on the Terry and Jesse Show, will be there. Don't miss it. Go to virginmostpowerfulradio.org or call us at 877-526-2151.
It is only because of your continued prayers and generous donations that Virgin Most Powerful Radio can broadcast live each weekday. We count on your spiritual and financial support because you understand the urgent need for Catholic programming that shares the gospel with clarity and charity, but without compromise. As usual, we're doing it all on a shoestring budget, but we cannot do it without you. If you like what you hear on Virgin Most Powerful, I ask you to please prayerfully consider becoming a monthly donor. You can set it up with the touch of a button on our website, catholicrc.org.
Buying or selling your home or your business property? This is Terry Barber. Real Estate for Life underwrites the Terry and Jesse Show, and they can connect you to one of 900 pro-life real estate agents around the world. And when they receive their referral fee, they will give 80% of it to a pro-life organization. Wow! That's 80%! RealEstateForLife.org, 877-LIFE-US1.
Now, back to Hands-On Apologetics with Gary Machuda. If you'd like to join the conversation, call 888-526-2151. Here's Gary.
Welcome back, everybody. We're talking to Master Apologist Matt Frad about his book, God's God Exists, Socratic Dialogue. And, you know, Matt, I was reading your book, and immediately, Chapter 2, The Problem of Evil, comes on. I thought, wow, that's pretty daring to start with the most potent objection against theism. But, you know, in real life, usually non-believers will come out with the guns blazing. So that's pretty realistic.
Yeah. And I think it's the most visceral. It's sort of even the one that very unsophisticated younger people will trot out when they're trying to think through these things. You know, and they might say something simple like, why do bad things happen to good people? And what they're saying is, if there was a just God, then these things ought not to happen, but they do. So God probably doesn't exist, you know. Also, maybe some version of the problem of hiddenness. You know, like if God was all good, well, surely a prerequisite to believing in him is, you know, knowing that he's there. But the fact that he doesn't show me that he's there is proof maybe that he isn't, because he's not good. You know, that seems to be a subset of the problem of evil. So yeah, I think this is the one most people, put forth.
Yeah, I mean, it would take at least a couple of programs to go through the problem of evil. But what do you think would be the one point that you would hammer home to dispel that particular problem?
Well, I think the problem of evil can either be logical or pastoral. And by logical, I mean you could set up a syllogism and say something like, if God was all powerful and all good and all knowing, then evil shouldn't exist, because God would know about the evil. He would be able to eradicate the evil, you know. But because evil exists, that shows that God is either impotent, ignorant, or somehow wicked, you know, like morally corrupt. But to say that is just to say God doesn't exist. And that's rather formidable, you know. But, you know, Alvin Plantinga, philosopher, shows that if you just insert another premise, you can see why that conclusion doesn't have to follow. You know, you could say, well, maybe God has morally sufficient reasons for permitting the evil in the world. And since we're not omniscient, how do we know? And we could speculate about what his reasons might be. But even if we're not totally sure, it at least shows that the conclusion doesn't follow. But I think when most people talk about the problem of evil, that they really mean it from an emotional standpoint. Like, it just doesn't seem right. It's not bloody fair that people are hurt and trafficked and abused and die horrible deaths. Like, this is just awful. So I think when people often talk about the problem of evil, they're talking about it from that point of view, an emotional point of view. And I think when people are in that position, they don't need Christian apologetics right then and there necessarily. What they need is Christ. You know, what they need is for someone to sit with them and to grieve with them, to be compassionate with them. I think that's primarily what people need. So I think it's a very strong emotional argument, but I don't think it's a good intellectual one. And to show what I mean is, it'd be like, say, like here's an example on the other side. It's a compelling argument to believe in God emotionally, that, you know, you can see your loved ones in some happy place one day, right? Like, that's compelling. Like, that feels really great. I would like to believe that. But an atheist would say, just because it's emotionally compelling, that doesn't mean that it's true. We have to look at this logically. And I would agree with them. And I think the same thing can be said about the problem of evil. Just because it's emotionally compelling, it doesn't mean that atheism is necessarily true. We have to look at it logically. And I think when you do, there's ways to answer it.
Yeah, no, that's excellent. That's a great way to put it. I agree 100%. It's the emotional component that's really the problem. In a way, it's
most certainly.
Christian revelation kind of confirms that, because God didn't create everything evil. He created everything good. It's evil's like the unnatural thing. Sin and death are something that just doesn't feel right, you know, to humans.
And I think our concept of God is also problematic. Like, if it were God's job to make his, you know, human creatures happy, you know, like we're all a bunch of, you know, I don't know, like animals that he's in charge of, and his job is to make us happy. And I think that is how many of us think about God. Mm-hmm. Well, if that were true, then I would agree. That's a pretty compelling argument against God, because we're not bloody happy. And there's a lot of people who live miserable lives. But what if that's not God's chief purpose, you know, the chief aim in this life is to make us happy? What if his chief goal was to bring us into relationship with himself so that we can be saved and have eternal life? Like, if that were the primary reason, then you could speculate that it's only in a world that has this amount of evil and suffering in it that many people, the most people, would come to know Christ and find salvation. I mean, I grant that that's speculative, but it shouldn't be quickly dismissed. I think we all know people who only at times of tremendous suffering and despair, when they felt that they were at the end of their rope, they were able to kind of reach out to something greater than themselves and then found a joy and a strength that they didn't know was possible.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Well, hey, I have a short list of questions I'd love to ask Matt Frad if I ever had a chance. So let me just go through them. Okay. Aquinas's five ways. He gives five distinct arguments for proofs for the existence of God. Which one do you think is the most compelling?
Yeah, well, yeah, it's interesting. In the Summa Theologiae, he gives about five. But if you look at his works as a whole, it's honestly well over a dozen. Interestingly enough, Aquinas thinks that the most compelling argument is the argument from motion. I think that's pretty compelling. I think they do kind of put together a cumulative case for God's existence. So, like, you might look at one and be like, "Oh yeah, that's really good. I'm not sure if it convinces me, but it's pretty good." But by the time you've gotten to number five, you're like, "Well, they're all pretty good," and that kind of strengthens, you know, the sort of confidence in arguments for God's existence in general. I like the fifth one, so the argument from teleology, and the basic idea there is, like, if something is mindless and yet it acts for an end which is good, how do you explain that? You know, atoms and protons and electrons, you know, if these things weren't sort of preordained to reach certain ends that were good, you know, evolution wouldn't be possible, for example. The fact that they do shows that there's almost like an intention within them. And how do you explain that? And it seems like a good explanation for that would be a mind. I like that argument. I like the argument from contingency. You know, so like if you look around and everything that exists is contingent upon other factors, nothing sort of explains itself. You know, it's all explained by something else. You know, you couldn't just imagine it existing in complete isolation to other things. And that's kind of true of everything that we encounter in the universe. So you could say that the universe is the sum total of contingent things. Well, if X has to be explained by something else because it's contingent, well, if everything is contingent, then everything must be explained by something that is not ultimately contingent, and that's what we mean by God. So I like that one too.
Yeah, good. Okay, of the five, which one do you think is the hardest to wrap your mind around?
That's a good question. They're all pretty difficult. I mean, the first three are kind of similar in that they rely on infinite regress. So I think the argument from motion is quite difficult to understand. Like, so if something changes, it has to be explained by something outside of itself. And if the universe is just the sum total of changing things, then it ought to be dependent upon a changeless causing thing. I think that's pretty difficult to wrap your head around.
Yeah. Yeah, in fact, I think you touched on something too, that, ladies and gentlemen, when you're looking at the five ways of Aquinas, they are so thinly sliced. It's so easy to start off with an argument for change and end up with efficient causality or, you know, possibility and necessity or something like that.
And then the argument from from degrees of being is also really difficult. Like, unless you kind of understand the transcendentals and the truth and goodness are, you know, the same thing as being looked at through a different lens, it's really difficult to understand how, you know, gradations in being could point to an infinite being. They're all pretty bloody difficult. I think that's why you don't hear people just trot them out, you know, in a syllogism, because they do rely on Aristotelian metaphysical jargon that many of us aren't familiar with. Yeah. And so for that reason, I wouldn't necessarily recommend, like, using one of these in a quick discussion with a skeptic. But I do think that so even though they're more complicated, I do find them ultimately more satisfying than, say, the Kalam argument or some other argument.
Yeah, very good. He definitely presupposes a lot in these arguments. Okay, question number two. If you were to be in a two-way debate with non-believers, who would you choose as your wingman, Dr. Fraser or Dr. Kraft?
Oh, I think I'd choose Dr. Kraft, because even though I think Fraser is more accurate and obviously understands Thomas Aquinas a great deal more, I feel like Kraft is a seasoned apologist who is very gifted at explaining proofs for God's existence and refuting arguments for atheism with aplomb, whereas I'm not sure if Fraser would be as gifted at that.
Yeah, good point. Okay, final question, Matt. Is there a official beer of Pints of Aquinas?
I have to confess, I'm not really a beer drinker.
Oh,
that scandalizes people when they hear that. It's all basic. I actually like whiskey, so I tend to like bourbon in summertime and a kind of peaty scotch in the winter. But if I have to drink a beer, I'll drink a stout. So I guess I would say that the official beer of Pints with Aquinas would be a stout, because it's strong and hearty, like the works of Thomas Aquinas.
There you go. Yeah, I reminded of a line from Father Fessio when he came back from studying in Rome. He had American beer, you know, which is very light compared to European beer. And he said, you know, this is not beer and this is not theology. So he made a comparison with American theology in Rome. All right. Well, thank you, Matt. It's been a lot of fun. How can people get a hold of your stuff?
Oh, they can go to mattfrad.com. Follow me on all the social media things. But God bless you, and thanks for your terrific work. I'm not sure if you realize it or not, but me and all my kind of Catholic apologist type buddies are all super jazzed about the book you wrote on the Bible. And assured that it's done a lot of great work in our lives. So thank you.
Thank you so much. All right. Matt Fraad, everybody. Great stuff. You got to check out his Pints with Aquinas. It's time for us to turn off the lights here at the Apologetics Dojo, and also shut down the Midwest Command Center. Coming up next, as always, just stay tuned for High Intensity Catholic Talk Radio with the Terry and Jesse Show. And I hope everybody has a fantastic day. Coming up tomorrow, we're going to be talking about sacrifice and the sacrifice of Mass. And also Friday, the incomparable Teresa Tomeo. God bless everybody. Bye-bye.
In the 1990s, I lived and worked in Hollywood. But when my wife Betty's mom took ill, we relocated to Orange County. And it was during this time in our lives that I converted to Catholicism. Once my eyes were opened to the truth, I couldn't learn enough about the faith. But I had less free time than ever, especially with a long commute. That's when I discovered the real value of Catholic audio. Listening to cassette tapes transformed my daily commute into a miniature retreat. And that's the beauty of Virgin Most Powerful Radio today. Since the podcasts are archived, you can listen anytime on our smartphone app. I know how listening to Catholic audio can bring you closer to Christ and His Church. So I encourage you to visit the App Store or go to vmpr.org and download the app today. It just might change your life. I'm Matthew Arnold for Virgin Most Powerful Radio.
Virgin Most Powerful Radio, sharing the gospel with clarity and charity.